And our first guest, Anthony Brandisi, you have a lot of knowledge of the school systems around here.
I do, Mark. And I would say the coffin is probably half closed on our district upstate here.
Not. It hasn't been nailed shut
not yet,
yet,
but it's half closed.
And you're a school board member at the Utica School District.
I am. That's correct. Yeah.
And how's that going for you? You like it?
I do. I enjoy being on the school board, and that's one of the reasons I actually decided to run for assembly as well. Is you know, after seeing some of the disadvantages to the Utica school system and mostly all the school systems within the 116th district, I just really felt like I couldn't sit by anymore. The way the state funds education is completely out of control. It needs to be changed. There was a fascinating editorial yesterday in the New York Times, and they did a comparison of the Ilion school district and Syosset school district downstate. They call it rich district, poor district. And
I can only guess which one Ilion would turn into.
You got it.
The poor district.
They both have the same cut in state funding, about $1.5
million. Mm-hmm.
Ilion struggles to provide foreign languages. They can only give you one Spanish. Out of all the AP courses that could be offered, they offer one, biology. And this $1.5 million cut to them is devastating. Taking comparison, Syosset School District, which is a very wealthy school district, who $1.5 million is... you know, like a rounding error on their books. They offer about five or six different foreign languages, including sign. They have sign language that they offer. They offer 35 different AP courses. $1.5 million cut to them is nothing. They can turn around to their taxpayers and say, we need that extra money, and they have the tax base to support that. Whereas in Utica, Whitesboro, Rome, even Ilion, Mohawk Valley school districts, we don't have that property tax base to support a large tax increase. So when the state cuts our funding, it hurts us a lot more, and the kids are really the ones that are shortchanged.
You know, it's just ridiculous how it keeps going on.
Yeah,
and it's like every election cycle and every fiscal year, you hear upstate New York, we'll get to you.
Yeah,
you're getting yours. Just wait a minute, and we've waited.
Yeah, well, there was a lawsuit back in 2000. So it was settled back in 2006 or 07, which said that New York has to provide a sound basic education for all kids in New York State. They provided some additional funding the first year and in the second year, but they've cut the funding, and we're getting shortchanged. It's not fair. Districts like Utica, like Rome, like Whitesboro, who rely on that state funding, when it's cut, you know, it's really the kids that are going to suffer.
Yep.
It's not the administrators. It's not the school board members. It's the kids.
Has anybody ever told you you look like the Butler head coach? I mean, we were talking about it before we started, but you look exactly like that guy.
I got that last year during the tournament. Everyone came up to me and said, wow, I was watching the Butler coach, Brad Stevens.
Yeah,
Brad Stevens. And they said, wow, did you get a new job coaching Butler? I said, well, you know, I love basketball, and that would be a great job, but no.
Well, hey, I hope they win the national championship.
It'll be great for you. I'm rooting for them. I really
are.
I can't think of any team that would want to go against them in this tournament. I mean, they are just—they're
so good,
rolling over people.
They're so good, and then the Virginia Commonwealth University weren't even supposed to be in it. Now, were they a play-in game?
I don't know if they were the play-in game or not. I was listening to ESPN this morning, and they were talking about VCU and how they didn't think they would even get into the tournament.
Yeah.
They actually did get an at-large bid, and it's unbelievable. That's the great thing about this tournament is you can get the smaller schools in there, and it's exciting.
Yeah, so you're a big basketball guy.
I am.
Who'd you have to win in your brackets?
Well, you know, as a loyal Syracuse fan, I had Syracuse going very far. I didn't have him winning
no,
the bracket,
no,
but
right.
I had Syracuse going far. I had Kansas going pretty far in Kentucky and Duke, but
pretty big shockers right there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like the underdogs. This year is the underdogs' time to shine.
No question about it, and that's good. That's good for the sport. It really is.
I
think fans enjoy that.
So why don't we talk about your nomination? For the assembly seat, the special election seat, it's a big step for you.
It is a big step. I was really humbled. Thursday night, we had our Democratic committee meeting, and I was nominated as the person to possibly run Glenn Broan.
Well, yeah, because you still have to be approved, I guess, by the state.
Correct.
Party,
well,
right?
Yeah, well, what has to happen is Roanne DeCito still has to be confirmed by the Senate, and then the governor has to call a special election. So I'm kind of like the nominee in waiting.
Yeah,
you know, so
it's quite the title.
We
got
to see what happens, and you know, everyone expects that Rowan will be confirmed, and when that happens and the special election is called, then I will be the Democratic nominee.
Now, what was the process for being chosen?
What the Democratic Party does is the committeemen within the 116th district, which is Utica, Rome, Whitestown, Florida.
It's a big area.
It's a big area.
Yeah.
those committee men will have a vote on who the nominee is. So once I heard that Roanne was moving on to this new position, mm-hmm. I was certainly interested in running for the assembly. I started making calls to Democratic leaders, got in my car, I went around the district, I went to people's homes, called committee men, they met me in their homes, met them for coffee, I went to their ward meetings, sat down and just explained what my beliefs were, and I wanted to find out their concerns. And that's, through that process, I think I made a lot of good connections, and people liked what I had to hear, and they selected me as their nominee.
What were the biggest concerns that you heard through this whole process?
The biggest concerns in our district, as statewide, I think, are jobs, taxes, and spending. We're losing population. The reason we're losing population is because the jobs just aren't here anymore. State spending, everyone is in agreement, has to come under control. I think Governor Cuomo's doing his part to try and do that. I hear they've reached a tentative agreement on the budget, which is a good thing. But, politicians have been trading taxpayer dollars for votes for years.
Yeah.
And really, the spending spree has to come to an end. So I decided to run because I feel I have the proper experience. I'm a lawyer. I understand how to research laws, the legislative process. There's no learning curve for me on that. As a school board member, I understand education policy. I'm a small business owner, which is really the backbone of our economy. I'm a parent. I have two young children. I have a wife who teaches at MBCC. So I really do care about what happens to this district. I came back here after law school, and I want to see this district thrive. So we got to get the spending under control. We need people who can make tough decisions. I think I've demonstrated that I can make tough decisions. I voted against our school budget last year, which is certainly not a popular thing to do, but it carried a tax increase. And I felt that our district wasn't doing enough to cut spending. So before I was going to go to the voters to ask them for a tax increase, I felt we should have had some more cuts in our spending, which we really did not have last year. And that's why I voted against the school budget, which is certainly not a popular move for any school board member, but it's something that I felt was necessary. And I'll take the same attitude to Albany.
Now, a lot of people are saying that you're too kind of young and not experienced enough for this position.
Yeah.
How old are you? You're 32.
32 years old. I don't think that's a negative thing. I think that having some we're trying to attract young people to this area.
Yeah.
There was a forum last week at SUNY, and they asked the question, how many of you, to college kids, how many of you are going to stay in this area after college? And I think one or two people raised their hands. I mean, that's tragic. We have so many wonderful colleges and universities here, and no one's going to stay here after they graduate. And the reason is there's just not jobs. So I think being a young person, I can speak to other young professionals and hopefully show that I've done it. I'm going to work hard to keep and attract jobs to this area so you can do it. But being young is not a negative. I haven't been in the political process for years.
Yeah.
I don't carry a lot of baggage. I don't owe favors to 20 different people or groups. So I can go to Albany. I have a fresh conscience, and I can roll up my sleeves, get to work, and do the business of the people, not worry about who I owe or what favors I have to pay back.
I like your hairstyle, too. Me and you have the same thing going on.
You got the grays.
A lot of grays in this studio, Anthony. And people are always like, oh, what are you, 35? You have all that gray hair? That's not bad. I'm like, nah, I'm like 29, and I have a full head of gray hair.
Hey, it's at least we're not losing it.
Yeah, right? Tom Brokaw used to pay to get his hair like this.
That's right.
That's what I tell people.
It's distinguished.
Yeah, now I'm like, well, I have an assembly candidate. He's got the same thing going on.
That's right.
People always kill me, though. They're like, oh, did you ever hear of hair dye for men?
That's
just
the first thing people say to me. They ask me how old I am, and they say, wow, you got a lot of gray hair for being 32 years old.
I get the same thing. I'm like, what? Come on, I'm not going to dye my hair. There's two things I said I'll never do in my life, is dye my hair and smoke crack.
There you go. I'm on board with that.
I'm pretty good so far. My track record is impeccable.
There you go.
Sorry, it's just that. I just noticed that. I didn't know you were 32.
32.
You're pretty young. And you're married with two kids?
Two kids. I have a four-year-old son. Well, he'll be four in May, and I have a five-month-old daughter.
Oh, wow. Very young.
Busy guy.
Yeah, I got it. And people, whenever somebody asks me why I have gray hairs, I go, well, let's see. I've got a two-year-old and a fiance that loves to talk and bust my chops.
There you go.
So I get on it. Let's see. You want to take any calls or anything like
Sure.
that? Talk of the town, you're on.
Yes, Anthony, just wondering, what's your take on the millionaire's tax? Is this something we can do away with at this time, or no?
The concern I have with the millionaire's tax is I'm certainly not in favor of extending the millionaire's tax the way it is currently, where it's $200,000 on individuals, $300,000 on families. But if they make it a true millionaire's tax, and it can provide, so it's only imposed on actual millionaires, and it's and it can provide some extra funding and revenue for education. I would something that I think we should look into.
Well, great. I just wanted to hear that. Thank you.
Sure.
Millionaire's tax. Why don't you describe what that is?
Well, there was a surcharge that was imposed, and there was an extra tax on people earning above $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
And Governor Cuomo has decided that he did not want to extend that particular cut. Many in the assembly disagreed with that. They felt that that money, what would happen is that money produces about $2 billion in revenue.
Right.
And a $10 billion deficit, that's a pretty big chunk of change. Governor Cuomo pledged that he would not have any new taxes, so he would not extend that millionaire's tax. Some folks were in favor of making it high, raising the limit to people earning over $1 million,
yeah,
and taking that revenue, putting it back into education. That's something that I think we should look into. There's a number of things that we could look into for raising revenue. I was reading another article last night about all the different tax credits that New York State gives out. We give out about $29 billion in state tax credits, mm-hmm, every year. And most of them are good. Most of them encourage investment and development. But others stay on the books year after year with no analysis of their value. There's one example that caught my attention. Sellers of precious metals and coins get a tax break that cost the state $185 million in 2010.
Hmm. So like the cash for gold guys. I mean, I
think so.
Yeah.
I they were saying in this article, if we could just do away with about 5% of these tax credits, it would bring in an extra $1.5 billion in revenue. And, you know, I'm certainly in favor of tax credits, especially for businesses, mm-hmm, to encourage job hiring and things of that nature. But I think that we should look at some of these and see which ones are working, which ones make sense.
Right.
And if they don't make sense, let's not extend them.
How do we get more revenue, new revenue, I should say, without taxing anymore in the state? Because it seems like every time you turn around that there's a new tax for something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I think the most important thing is we got to look at our spending first. And we got to find ways to cut spending. We also got to look at the taxes. I'm not in favor of any new taxes. I'm actually in favor of this property tax cap that has been proposed by the governor, as long as it comes with true mandate relief. You know, we hear a lot about these unfunded mandates, mm-hmm, imposed on school districts and municipalities, and the governor has proposed some changes to that. Personally, I don't think that some of the things he's proposing go far enough. I do agree that we need to have a moratorium on all these mandates, on any new mandates. We should have an independent cost analysis on all the existing mandates. But really, there's a lot of mandates out there that we haven't looked at. School districts have to – there was a study done by the New York State School Board Association that says anywhere between 15 and 20% of school district budget is tied up in these unfunded,
yep,
mandates.
Yep.
And it just kills the property. You know, if the state's going to impose these mandates on us – and they got to give us the revenue to fund them, because we can't turn around and raise taxes.
Right.
It just makes it very difficult.
So you're in favor of the 2%?
I'm in favor, but we really, yep, have to have some true mandate relief. And I think any person in county government, city government, school districts will tell you the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. So it's that tax cap. So I don't know. I personally couldn't just as it is right now. I think it's a bad deal for upstate New York.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, there's some room to work with it, but I think right now, and hearing all these superintendents and the school managers of different districts, they're saying it's going to be it really is going to be crippling for our schools.
Yeah.
And it goes hand in hand with the state mandated projects.
Right.
The state mandates that aren't unfunded.
Right.
It's like they're getting cut off at the ankles. I think that's what a quote was. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, now who's going to be a Republican opponent?
I have no idea.
There's a lot of talk out
every
there.
Every hour it seems to change. You know, you hear different names.
Yeah.
And same thing on the Democratic side. It was, you know, you heard all different names, people running, who's not running. Same thing on the Republican side. I've come to the conclusion I got to just focus on my,
yeah,
election, you know,
yeah,
what I'm going to do. I'm going to run a very aggressive election campaign. I'm very energetic, so I'm going to pound the pavement and go door to door. That's what I did during my school board campaign. I tend to do the same thing during this election. Mm-hmm. Really, I got to get out there and meet the voters and find out what their concerns are and try and find some solutions to the problems that they're facing.
Well, it's no doubt that you have big shoes to fill.
No question about it.
For this assemblywoman, have you spoken with Ryan?
I have spoken to her. She's very encouraging. She's done a number of great things for this area. She's been here for 20 years. She's gained seniority, which has certainly helped this area immensely. And I hope I can continue some of the good projects that she started.
Talk of the town, you're on.
Hi. First of all, I wanted to take the opportunity to congratulate Mr. Brindisi.
Thank you very much.
You are a very outstanding gentleman, and like you say, you are pure. You owe no one any favors. You have big shoes to fill.
Yes.
But I just want you to know, I think it's wonderful that it's someone young, that it's someone that knows what it's like to pay a household bill.
Yes. Yep.
And these are all pluses.
Thank you.
Let me just add this. I worked for the Assembly for 25 years. I'm no longer there, but congratulations.
I appreciate it.
I know you're going to be our man.
I hope so.
Thank you. A lot of people are making the comparisons to a young JFK, Anthony. I got to tell you.
Oh, man.
those are even bigger shoes to fill. And, you know, not wanting to sound biased or anything, I think it is very encouraging to see somebody young running for a state seat. Even locally, I think that more young people should be trying to get into government. And you're starting to see that with Joe from your law firm, right?
Yep, in the fourth ward.
Yep, he's running against incumbent Joan Scalise. And it's nice to see. We need some fresh air around here.
Yeah.
Just the same old policies and politics and all that crap is starting to get stale.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot. People want fresh faces. They want to see some new ideas in Albany and in the area. And that's why I ran. I really, truly do care about this area. Like I said, I have two kids and my wife. We all live in. I've lived in Utica all my life. I want to see this area thrive. I love this area. I want to see it prosper, and that's why I decided to run.
And you probably could have jumped ship and got out of town quite a while ago.
Yeah, I came back here after law school because I have very fond memories of growing up.
Yeah,
I think this area is like a sleeping giant. You know, we just need the proper motivation, the right people in office to try and move things along and bring us up in the state.
B95, you're on with Anthony Brindisi.
Yes, I have a question for Mr. Young Brindisi. One of the hottest topics around for this budget is the teachers. Now, one thing that I have to ask is, why do we need a superintendent of schools plus about two or three assistant superintendents when we got all these principals in the school?
Yeah, is that it? Yeah, and you're pretty much focusing on the Utica School District, right?
Any of the school districts, be it town-wise, Utica-wise, everything.
All right.
You got eight schools, let's say you got eight schools, you got eight principals, plus a superintendent, plus assistant superintendents.
Yes.
That's all.
Okay, thank you. So I guess he's trying to get at in a roundabout way is how do we cut from the administration of the schools and not from the teaching aspect?
I could speak to the Utica School District, because that's where I'm a board member.
Right. Yeah.
We are a growing district. We're one of the largest districts in the area. Most districts around here are losing students. We're gaining students, and it's due to the refugee population. The state and the federal government under No Child Left Behind in the state has imposed so many different mandates on us that you have to have people in place to implement these mandates. I am certainly not in favor of expanding administration. I've said that during my tenure on the school board. People are concerned with the number of administrators in Utica, but I can tell you this. Utica receives an extra $800,000 a year from the state due to what's called administrative efficiency, because we are doing less, we're doing more with less.
Right.
When you compare us to other districts, we don't have the same number of administrators that other districts do. But, you know, every school has to have a principal. Some schools have an assistant principal. It's because the number of kids that are in the schools. You have 2,700 kids at Proctor. That's like a small city.
Yeah, okay? That's a lot. Yeah.
They speak 39 different languages there.
It's like a United Nations almost over there.
It truly is. It really is.
Really.
Every country is represented. There are discipline issues. That's why you have assistant principals. We also have testing mandates that we have to comply with. The job of the principal is really to focus on testing and getting test scores up.
Right.
But there's discipline issues that go on in the school, and that's where the assistant principals come in. They are responsible for discipline within the school district.
I mean, it's like having a manager over, let's say, at Walmart. You have your head manager, and then you have your department managers and so on and so on.
Correct.
Just to make sure everything kind of runs smoothly.
And that's, you know, I understand people's concern, and that's one of the reasons I did vote against that budget last year in the school districts, because I felt that there were areas that we were not cutting. Some of it had to do with administration. There were some areas where we could have combined and consolidated some positions, and we didn't do that. That's one of the reasons that I did vote against the budget last year.
Excellent. Good luck out there, Anthony.
Thank you, Mark.
It's going to be an interesting cycle. I can't wait for it. Now, if I'm correct, maybe you could correct me on this, but after the after OAN is confirmed by the state, then there's 70 days for the special election. Is that right?
Between 70, at least the minimum 70, up to 80 days.
Up to 80. So as soon as we see that, and I'm assuming that she's going to be confirmed after the state budget passes and they get her vote on everything like that.
That's what I anticipate.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
I wish all elections were just 70 days, really.
I wish they were just
3 weeks long.
You know, we're starting this summer. The campaigns are going to be starting for the next elections for the whole city.
It's too much.
We got the mayor's seat. We got the whole Utica Common Council, and everybody's up for re-election.
I don't know who focuses on elections in June and July. I mean, nobody cares.
They want. Everybody wants to eat hot dogs and grill hamburgers, hear how bad this guy is and how bad that guy is.
After Labor Day, that's when we should start focusing on elections.
I say we make that a state law.
I do too. No,
excellent.
No signs before September 1st.
Please no. Excellent. Anthony Brandisi, hopeful candidate for the New York State Assembly. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.